What's happening, y'all? This is Todd Wilson with another episode of Elevate Your Game. Today, we have entrepreneur, former college player. He's the program director
of One Goal Basketball.
Of One Goal Basketball and the podcast Score Society. Yep. It is just uplifting the community of having a strong mindset.
Absolutely.
Man, we connected over Instagram. I had to have him come in to speak to you guys about his experience and what he's doing in the community, man. Really support what he's doing and just getting the information out there. Mr. Sean Amos.
Oh, man. Appreciate you. No, thanks for having me.
No, 100%, man.
Thanks for having me.
We love to start this place off with the Wall of Hoop movies. Your favorite hoop movie of all time and why?
He Got Game. He Got Game is definitely my favorite movie. It's one of the movies that inspired me to play basketball. That gave me like a vision for basketball. Like Above the Rim was like the first one, but He Got Game, when I was watching Jesus Shuttlesworth, aka Ray Allen, he had the vision to go to school. And I've grown up in Philly, you know, I was kind of like, I'm in the inner city of Philly, so I was doing knucklehead stuff with doing a bunch of other knuckleheads, right? And I did, but I was still playing ball a little bit, wasn't too serious about it. And I remember just watching that movie and everyone was on about going to college, what college you want to go to, what college you want to go to. And I was thinking to myself, this is the way out. This is the way out of the inner city. If I can get a basketball scholarship, I can go to college and explore the world. So, excuse me. So that's the movie that really kept me motivated every day.
That's dope. I rarely hear that a movie, like this is our number one favorite movie when people come in here, is He Got Game probably. And hearing it, that's what inspired you to go to college.
Like, yeah.
I don't know if they knew the impact of that part, right? They're trying to tell a story about, you know, father, son, and all this other stuff, but man, to get encouraged to go to college.
No, I watched this about every day before working out, I watched this movie. Like if I didn't watch all of it, I watched some of it. I can, if you play this movie right now, I can recite word for
verbatim.
Verbatim, bro. I promise.
That's dope. No, I don't know if I go verbatim, but I definitely know. I know the movie for sure. So when did you fall in love with basketball?
You know what? I want to say I was a late bloomer, bro. Like 13, 14 years old. I didn't really do an actual basketball drill until 14 years old, and like I said, just growing up in the inner city, you know, you're around a bunch of knuckleheads and you start to see their demise. You start to see them getting locked up. You start to see them getting into more trouble in school. They start smoking weed or whatever the case may be. That wasn't me. That wasn't in my heart. Don't get me wrong. They were my friends. You know, I tried to hang with them as much as possible. And I remember one day my friend, my childhood friend, Kyrie Brown, he called me one day and said, "Hey, why don't you try this AAU thing? Why don't you try this AAU practice?" And I didn't know what AAU was, but he was telling me that they was traveling. You know, it was like a tournament called Charlie Weber. I don't know if you ever remember, if you remember or familiar with but it was like in Connecticut, and I wanted to travel, so I was just like, "Let me go check this out." And I never forget walking in that gym and seeing all the talent in there and how they were embraced by all the older guys and coaches and whatnot. And I said, man, the stuff that these my knucklehead friends are doing is a waste of time. But this right here, this is gonna get me there. So at like 13, 14, I made a commitment to it.
Man, that's dope. And then did you have adults, mentors in your life pushing you that way? Because, you know, I think for a 13 or 14 year old kid, if you're influenced by your friends, right, you have to have someone who's trying to keep you in a straight line. So talk about that experience in your life and having people to keep you on that straight and narrow.
Yeah, I had two coaches, Marvin DeBose and Bobby Pendleton. Really good guys. It's funny how I met them. I asked them for like a dollar or something like that. It was like, "Didn't your parents ever tell you not to ask strangers for money?" And then they laughed about it. They ended up giving me a dollar. And I was already tall. So I was like, for my age anyway, I was about 5'10 or something like that. I was like in the eighth grade. And they was like, "Man, why don't you come down here or whatever and play, you know, play on our team?" And through there, we build a bond, right? Like there was days where we would talk, have life talks more than we would practice, right? So practice would be about 2 hours. We'll sit in the office and have life talks for about 3 hours. And they would, you know, drive me home. We'll still have more life talks. And they would just try to make me aware of the things that that can happen in the inner city. Mm. So, you know, I fell in love with the conversations and as well as fell in love with the game of basketball, but they kept me grounded. They kept me in it. There was the type of coaches where we would go on tournaments and, you know, they paying for the food for the kids and stuff like that. They picking the kids up, you know. So that's why coaching is dear. Me being a coach is dear to my heart because I just want to make sure I'm doing the same thing they did for me.
100%. Mm-hmm. I was most impacted. You know, my parents were great, but the coaches in basketball, like what they invested into me mm-hmm. without wanting anything back then.
Right.
I think that was, it was the organic part of the game, right? Mm-hmm. It was like, that's what AAU basketball was. It's like, yo, we're doing this. Even, I live in the suburbs, you know, I didn't have to deal with the inner city part. My mom moved me far away from the hood because she had to grow up in it. So she moved, you know, we lived in Corona in the IE where it was the suburbs. But still, our coaches just pick me up for every game and take me home, buy mm-hmm. me food, and all those things just took care of me. Like, man, like these people, they don't really even know me like that, but they showed that love. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's what's missing in today's game. Yep. Everybody else is out there to find the next kid to make them a paycheck, next person to win tournaments. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't pick up a ball until I was 11, mm-hmm. and the coaches invested into me. That's how I got good. It wasn't because I was just talented already. Yep. And I was mm-hmm. able to earn a position to go play AAU because you couldn't just go play AAU. Like, not like you can now, right?
No, not at all.
And so I feel like that is the piece. And I'm not saying coaches don't do it now because there are some good coaches out there who are holistically coaching, right?
Right.
But that's the part that's missing on a wider scale.
Yeah, I agree. I 100% agree. Like what you were saying about coaches looking for players to win tournaments, right? Like, there's no real gentle care in it, obviously because the money's involved and whatnot. And that's the way I was brought up as far as being a coach. You got to care about the kids. And I think that's where I have my dilemma at this stage in my career of coaching. Because now it's not all, but some parents are just more so like, look, I put money into it. I want to see it right now. And it doesn't happen right now. You know, it happens over time. Like, I started playing ball 13, 14 years old, but I didn't see any recognition from it until I was almost 19, 20, my first year in college.
Yeah.
You know, so it takes time. So during that time, you actually have to have a care for the child. You have to have, outside of them playing basketball.
Yes.
So now you have kids who just jumping from team to team, and they're not really learning or going through the process. You're playing on one team that you're the star player, and then you're playing on another team where you're gonna be, like, you're not really soaking in the wins, the losses, the ups, the downs. You're just really running from it. Yep. So that's what I kind of struggle with as an older coach now.
No, 100%. Yeah. I think all of us are at that place, right, where we're starting to really see that change, and mm-hmm. it's what's missing. And so, you know, my goal is for the people who do know, like, yo, let's get it right? Right. And the families and kids and parents who don't want to be invested into developing the right way and sticking through the adversity, then they're going to handle themselves.
Right.
They're going to, you know, keep jumping from team to team and see it's not all beautiful when they go to try to make a varsity team in Southern California. Because it ain't no joke out here.
No joke, bro.
So, all right. So, you from the East Coast. I'm sure you think the East Coast is where the best basketball is. Do you agree?
Yeah.
Or do you see what we do on the West Coast? I mean.
You know what? I'll say the West Coast. I've always said this. West Coast is more skilled. Mm-hmm. I'll say the West Coast is more skilled for sure. I say the East Coast is more tough. And the reason why I say that, one, obviously, the training culture out here is amazing. And I didn't experience until I moved here. Like, you know, I didn't have someone train me until I was like 17 years old, right. 18 years old. Like, kids have been training like 9 years old, and it's been for a long time.
I've had 6-year-old clients.
Yeah. So this has been for a while. This has been like the culture of basketball for California or the West Coast. East Coast, the thing is, we have a basketball court on every single corner, at every neighborhood. So to actually be considered good or embraced by your neighborhood, you had to be better than a lot of people. And in order to be better than them, you got to be tougher than them.
Yeah.
You know, because we, because, you know, this is the East Coast, bro. Like, you, there's a bunch of row houses. You see each other every day. You know, it's that ego that's involved into it. So, yeah, you toughness is more of the East Coast thing, but West Coast is definitely more skilled.
And you got to survive that weather, man. I was out there last week. I was out there for hoop haul. Man, it is too cold, bro. Too cold, I was like, bro. Yeah, this is why you get tough.
Yep.
Walking in this weather and thinking it's normal.
You walk in the weather, it's cold. Then let's say you go to a gym, and the gym is packed. And it's one court. It's not like you see the Mavs or AIM where you got 9 basketball courts. It's literally one court, 20 guys. And some of the guys are in high school. Some of the guys used to play high school. Some of the guys are drug dealers. So you got to actually not literally fight, but fight your way on. And then if you're not a tough person or don't stand your ground, they're taking your winners. They're taking that opportunity you had. You were sitting there waiting for it. So you had to be tough out there. So yeah, there's a lot of things that factor into it.
I understand. I think there's a different level of toughness from West Coast kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because that talent and skill for sure. But I do, my favorite, I went to some of these, you know, Pangos and Team USA, and I'm watching all the kids from Philly. Man, I'm a fan. Like,
yeah.
They so just play really different. They got that, I think it's like that AI swag. I know he's from Virginia, but mm-hmm. like that, I think AI kind of like, you know, he's a, everybody, all of our whole generation, like we all looked up to AI,
bro. Yep.
For sure in Philly was like, yo, that's it, right?
He had me wearing braids, bro.
Right. Man, I had so many teammates who had the Only Strong Survive tattoo in college. Like everybody had that, but that sort of toughness. And like I even picked that up from him, like, yo, he don't back down from nobody. He don't care how big they are. And so
facts.
That mentality even helped me. And you could see that in all the East Coast players even now. Like they don't smile on the court, man. And it's because this is life or death. It feels like that seriousness of the game, where I see a kid who's more talented out here on the West Coast, who's living a more comfortable life.
Mm-hmm.
They're way more talented, but mm-hmm. you know, they get pumped.
Yeah.
They will get pumped. So.
You, like I said earlier, it was the way out for me. You know, like I came from a single parent household. You know, I knew my mom wasn't in a financial place where she can support me going to college. So this was the only way for me. So when I went to schools or tried out for schools or played at schools, it was like even me or you. That was my mentality going into it. And you just learn it from being in Philly. Like once I got out of Philly, like even just I went to my first junior college I went to was Luzerne. It was like 2 hours away from Philly. I just didn't want to go back. I didn't want to go back to Philly. Like, I love Philly to death, but I just knew it was more out there, and I just had to use the tool of basketball to get there. And I think that's what the mentality that a lot of players had from there.
Yeah.
They just had that mentality, like, this is it. This is the way my family going to eat. This is the way I'm going to eat, type of thing.
Love that.
Yeah.
Love that. And what high school did you go to out in Philly?
Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King High School. So I can't think of no notable names that people would know, but yeah, amazing guys. A guy named DeJuan Robinson. DeJuan Robinson played for the University of Rhode Island, one of the all-time leading scorers. He actually had a stint in the NBA for a while, but I think, like preseason pretty much. We got guys, Akeem Wright, played at Kansas State. You know, the school I went to had 5 Division I players on it when I was in 10th grade.
Oh, wow.
Actually, DJ Stephen Jackson, all-time leading scorer for UTEP. So I played with some juggernauts at Philly for sure.
So you had to fight and claw your way through that. What was your high school experience like, and what was your development like, starting coming late to the game, right? 13, mm-hmm. 14, and being committed to the game at that time. What was that journey like through high school?
So 9th grade, I played JV and didn't really play much. So I don't know how I made varsity my sophomore year. You know, that was the year where we had about 5 Division I players. But I was a tough defender, you know, and I just didn't want to play JV, so I rode the bench. If I can do it all over again, and this for all you guys, if you can develop on JV and you have some playing time, play JV.
Man,
you know,
talk to him.
My junior year was a little similar. But that was because I just didn't know my role yet. I didn't know what I can do yet. I was still trying to find myself. Obviously, when you first coming out, you're a scorer. You think you're a scorer.
You think you're a scorer.
So you want to score. But like I said, I had guys who went on to college and led their school in all-time scoring.
Right.
So I wasn't that guy. And my senior year, was my opportunity to be a captain, which I was, and we had a terrible year. That's when I realized, like, I got to work on my leadership skills. I got to work on my game. And so I had a decent year as far as points, but it didn't mean anything because we didn't really win much. But yeah, that was my pretty much my high school experience, like just actually learning myself through the game of basketball, understanding what I can do and what I can't do, what I need to improve on. I think that's just part of the journey when you start late.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Man, that's amazing because you ended up playing university level basketball though.
Yeah.
And so for those people who are like, oh, playing JV as a freshman and mm-hmm. you know, not playing a lot your sophomore year or junior year, like, oh, I suck or I can't make it. And like, I have a kid who was started playing in middle school mm-hmm. and he was catching up to the kids who were in the program mm-hmm. and then recently surpassed them. Everybody mm-hmm. who was in that class, and it's a very strong class. Now he's in a position to where he's moved around a little bit, and so he's not the best player on his team anymore, again. Yeah. And you could tell, like, he's a grinder. He's going to work, and he's going to figure it out. But you could tell that the mentality piece. And I got to him and told him, I was like, remember what you did in middle school mm-hmm. when you beat all those people?
Mm-hmm.
Do it again in high school. And I said, guess what? You're going to have to do it again in college, too.
Right.
Where, you know, and he's going to a high major for college. And it's, but that mentality, like, that's going to keep happening to you.
Yep.
And you're going to be better than everybody, though, if you keep grinding and stay with that same mindset. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's about. It's like everybody's journey looks different. You could be this highly touted ranked player, Division I offers, yep. all these things, and still be in this place where you're working for your spot.
Yep.
And those are the ones who make it
yep.
and go far in this game. And so,
yeah. I mean, consistency is for sure. Like I said, even starting out with those, you know, players who are in Division I, Division II, or whatever, over time, if we compare all our careers together, like from high school to college, those players eventually went Division II. Mm-hmm. If you look at the stats between all of us, I'm probably ranked third mm-hmm. out of 15 guys who went Division I at one point.
Wow.
And I think that just was consistency. You know, I just was consistent, the same work ethic. That I carried when I was 14 years old. I would go out and shovel snow off the court and go shoot around. Mm. I carried it in college. So I was able to outlast a lot of guys just being consistent, just being just hard-nosed about it, just knowing what I want. And I was still, like, in a competitive way. Like, I didn't want to get to college and then kind of fall off. And I wanted to show people, like, yo, I'm still, I can be that person.
No,
you know, so yeah, so I think if no matter where you start, if you're consistent with it, it'll happen over time.
100%. Now, yeah. I low key want to just go put snow on a court and see who's gonna shovel it up to go play. But I don't think none of these kids do that.
No, like, I was the only one out there.
No, I used to play in 115 degree weather. My mom used to have to call me inside.
Yeah.
You know, we out in the IE where it gets super hot in the summer. I'm hooping like. It is
115 is crazy.
115, no, it's wild. It's dumb. Like, you know, it's dumb. Like, thinking back, like, what in the world was I doing?
Yeah, bro.
But it was, you know, you're just sweating for no reason and just hooping.
So, no, that's the love of the game, though, bro.
Yep. So, your recruitment. So, you end up going to a junior college, right? So,
yeah.
You know, your best way to enter that college scene. What was your experience like in junior college and how did it lead you getting to that university level?
Well, the first junior college was like upstate Pennsylvania. So, it was, It was okay. It was I think the coaching could have been better because we were so divided, right? So half the team was from Philadelphia or parts of Pennsylvania. The other half was from New York. Mm. So every practice was Philly versus New York, Philly versus New York, to the point where it was fist fights at practice.
Yeah.
Over time, we all became friends. We all became friends, been cool. We actually went to the state finals that year and lost. My freshman year, I averaged about 19 points. That's when I started to see the record. Like, that's why I started to see all the hard work from 14 years old to 19.
Four or five years later.
Yeah. So, like I said, I think the coaching could have been better. So, you know, a friend of mine, one of my best friends, Willis Gardner, we was just like, we're not going to waste another year here. So we started, like, emailing coaches, like personally ourselves, like, hey, what comes to your tryout? We got some video. It is like back in the day, like, you know what I'm saying? Right. Like, it wasn't no phones, it wasn't none of that. Right. You couldn't check your email from your phone. And so we had to keep going back to the computer lab, checking our email. And so we tried out for some schools and couldn't find nothing by the end of the summer, right? Well, closer to the end of the summer. Willis, we call him Woo, so I'll say Woo. Woo had ran into a guy who played at Rucker Park. Fresno State coach was there, and he liked Woo.
Vance Wahlberg?
I don't remember. No. So he liked Woo, and he was just like, hey, how would you like to play? And you know, he realized that his credits wouldn't transfer, so he introduced him to a school called Ohlone College in the Bay Area, where it was coached by my man John Peterson. And not my man, but he my man now. But
right,
he
was, right.
And he went out there, and Wu went out there, and he told me, like, yo, you got to come here, bro. It's a different level of basketball. Like, I thought I was killing it because I averaged 19 points. But when I ended up going out there and realized I didn't know nothing about basketball. Mm. I didn't even know how to jump stop. Like, at 20, I think I was approaching, like, 20 years old. I didn't know how to do a proper jump stop. I didn't know the importance of when to pass out of gaps. I didn't know the importance of 2 feet plant on a catch. And that really changed my life. I actually averaged about 7 points there, right? But it was a 5-in, 5-out offense. It was like a platoon offense where 4 guys coming in at a time, 3 guys coming in at a time, because we was that talented. So the highest average on the team was about 11, 12 points, right? And that's why I learned basketball. Like, before that experience, it was more about basketball was a survival thing. Basketball was a toughness thing. Basketball was a thing that's going to get me out of the hood. But when I got to California, it was like, now I'm learning how to play basketball. And
you had the dribble drive?
Dribble drive offense.
Yeah.
Four out one in.
Yeah.
4 out one in, bro. And obviously, you know, that's kind of like the game with East Coast players. Like, at that time, everyone could really pretty much drive and get handle the ball. So, but yeah, that's when I learned, like, understood angles. That's when I understood keeping your driving line, how to score with 3 dribbles, you know, stuff like that. So that's when I realized, yo, I got more work to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was my experience. And once I got to junior college, so once that school, you know, it took me a while to adjust because I'm averaging 19 points at one junior college. Now he wanted me to average 7, and I just couldn't understand that, right? And so he sat me down and he said, listen, I know a bunch of coaches. I don't care if you average 7 or 17, you're still going to go to the same level you're supposed to go to. And sure enough, you know, over time, you know, as the season started to play out, I started to realize, like, yo, everyone's still, we're all doing the same thing. You know, like, no one is outplaying anyone. It's just any given night, one of us can have it,
right.
You know?
Yep.
And I found out, I was going to go to Division I. I was looking to go to Division I. University of Houston was recruiting me. And I found out I was ineligible to play Division I. Because of a NCAA rule. I don't know if it still stands to this day, but it was a rule where if you redshirt or if you sit out a year, you can't go to school full time. I went full time.
Happened to me.
Yeah, I went the full time because I wanted the financial aid money. Yeah, yep. I wanted the financial aid money because I didn't have any.
Right.
So for $1,200, I lost my Division I opportunity. Right. So it was a Division II school called Adams State University. It was a new coach, Mark Murdoch. He was the coach in there. He said he was going to play like the Warriors, like, you know, the We Believe Warriors.
Yeah.
So that was right up my alley. And we played a little bit like it, but, you know, I went out there and I was like, you know what? It's a small town. I've never been in a small town. I'm going to try it. And it was, don't get me wrong, my basketball experience was good. But I would never do a small town again.
Where's Adams State now?
Alamosa, Colorado. So it was about 4 hours north of Denver. Yeah.
In the middle of nowhere. So you in like Montana, Wyoming?
Yeah, exactly. No, in the middle of nowhere, the biggest thing is the Walmart. You'll go to a bar, you'll meet the teachers at the bar with you.
Hey, Walmart be popping on Sundays, though.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's how it was in Kansas. I went with Dodge City. It was like, oh, yo, we going to Walmart on Sundays.
That's where you're going to see everyone. And all the people you're going to see because you're in class and you're in practice, you're going to see right at Walmart.
Yep. I want to go back to knowing the rules, man, like understanding the eligibility part, right? So mm-hmm. I did the same thing. I went to school full time because I stopped going to the junior college. That went to school full time. Ran out of eligibility real quick, and no one to guide me in that space, and how important it is for these parents to understand that part of the game versus, you know, if your kid could dunk or shoot threes like Curry, understanding that there's more to it. Mm-hmm. Just because, and you were prepared, you were good enough, you were capable of being mm-hmm. a Division I player, but somebody else got your spot because they did it the right way.
Yep.
Right? And so how important it is to have that balance to making sure you have the right information from the right people to be where you want to be.
I mean, it's costly, bro. Like, you don't have the right information, you can cost a lifetime opportunity. You know, that was a lifetime opportunity. I wish I could sit here and tell you, like, yeah, I had a great time at the University of Houston, you know? My journey is my journey, and I'm not taking anything for granted, but that was the goal. Like, when I was watching He Got Game, I wanted to play Division I basketball. And because you don't have the right information and I was just being a kid. I was 17 years old. At that time, I don't think I seen $1,000 all at once in my life before then. So they offered me $1,200. They're like, you get $1,200. I was checking the mail every day for that thing. And, like I said, the coaching at the other junior college, like, wasn't good. There wasn't no guidance there. There wasn't no one checking, making sure, like, hey, if you're going to sit out, you can't do 4 classes. You only can do 3 because you'll lose eligibility. They didn't care.
Yeah.
So, you know, having the information is vital because you can easily be a guy. I mean, I'm pretty sure you've seen it before where a guy is extremely talented, but he's playing at an NAIA school mm-hmm. because he didn't have the right credits in high school, or he transferred too many times. So yeah, the information is crucial to all success.
100%. Mm-hmm. So your experience at Adam State, like you said, it was a cool career, terrible town for your life.
Heck yeah.
Did you try to pursue a professional career after leaving college? And you know, how did it lead you coming back to California? Or did you go straight back to California after graduating? And what was that journey in between?
So after, like, you know, my last year at Adams State, we had a bad year. And we had a bad year. I did okay, right? Like, I did okay, but it doesn't mean anything at Division II level when you have a bad year. But I got an opportunity to go to Iceland. So I had, like, an agent, had a contract, but it wasn't a lot of money though. It's about, I forget, I want to say like $1,200 a month or something like that. But I think, to be honest, man, I just think I was burnt out. I think I was kind of burnt out. You know, that process was long. I think I played so much basketball from 14 years old to 22, 23 years old. My family needed my help financially. So for me, again, this is where guidance comes in at. Like, I wish I had a older person to tell me, listen, your family is going to be fine. Mm. Everything is going to be okay. Take that opportunity, experience the world, because you never know what can come out of it. As a kid, I thought I knew everything. I was nearsighted. It's only $1,200. I'm worth more in America. I can work at a supermarket and make that, you know? But I'm not thinking of one day I can be talking to Todd, talking about my professional career. You hear me?
Yeah.
So that's where, so that was the ending of my career at Adams State. You know, I had an opportunity to play in Iceland, but just being a kid, bro, just making adult decisions as a child.
Yeah.
And I think that's what kind of pushed me to coach, really, because if I had a coach, I didn't even check back in with my coaches from Philly on this type of stuff. You know, I thought I just knew it all. I thought I could do it all myself. I thought I had it under control. I thought it didn't matter. Like, if I'm not getting paid enough money, it don't matter. But I wish I could have took that opportunity to be a professional so I can teach kids more than what I know right now.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I've seen it both ways, right? Where somebody's like, you know what? I'm not going to do it. And they jump into their career and, you know, good things happen that way, right? You built something special with your program, your podcast, and you're doing all these things. And I've seen it the other way where I have...
Wait, 1 second, my phone, sorry. It wasn't Iceland. I don't know. It's like somewhere in Europe, though. But go ahead. My bad.
I forget. Whatever country, somewhere. Yeah, somewhere. Yeah, yeah. Over yonder, right?
Yeah.
And I have a player who did that as well, like who took 1,200 for their first year, and it was trash.
Right.
He was sleeping. Literally, there was a jar holding the bed up where he was sleeping. It was not a great situation. Yeah. He hurried up and got out of that. But he's built to the spot now where he's making more money and experience in the world. He's gotten to travel the whole world because of basketball and to build out of it. And so it's kind of what you're saying. I just want to encourage people who are listening, like, yo, that little bit of money can open doors to something way bigger if you go and keep your head down and keep working and do that. But also on the other side, it's okay if basketball has that finish line at that point, you know,
and that
can grow as well. It's more about your mentality stepping into wherever you go. That's going to open doors for you. And so there's always two sides to it. And as a hooper, though, we know the advice is like, if you can you continue to hoop and make money and you ain't got no real responsibilities, a wife, kids, you know, if you got to take care of your family, you got to take care of your family, go hoop for, I don't care how much money it is almost, because we long for those days where I'm like, yo, I wish I just had, you know, that one chance to go hoop.
Yep.
So.
No, for sure. Like I said, I wish I could have took that opportunity. I felt it was so much pressure to make money. And that's another thing I want like let kids know. Money is not everything. It's not everything because it comes, it goes. I couldn't tell you the money I was making at 23, 24. I don't have any of it saved, right? So, you know, I know for a fact that I could tell you what I did my first year as a professional athlete if I became one. You know what I'm saying? So money is not everything. It was a journey. It was a tough one.
Awesome. Then you transitioned straight into coaching after that, or?
Did I transition straight into coaching? Yes. I had a former coach, Ryan Ermer. Shout out Ryan Ermer. He coached me at Ohlone College. He was the assistant coach at Ohlone College. He had an opportunity to be the head coach at San Diego High School, and it was. And this, I know God was working in this situation because me and Ryan Ermer didn't get along as player and coach. I don't even know what made him even call me. I want to believe that I was probably his last resort because for me and him, I don't think we ever had like a bond off court. And I also, like I said, when I got to Ohlone College, I didn't really understand the game. So I don't think he was selecting me out of IQ. You know, like basketball IQ. So he called me and was like, yo, are you done with school? I had like one more semester. I have to go back to Adams State for one more semester to finish up with my bachelor's. And he was like, when you're done with that, how you feel about moving to San Diego and being my assistant? And like I said, my thing was, man, I just couldn't go back to Philly. That was the only thing. Like I said, I love Philly, but I just knew it's nothing but trouble. So I was like, yeah, I'm with it. I'll do it. And right after, like, I'll never forget it, December 15th, 2009, moved right to San Diego with $500 in my pocket with a promise of $1,200 stipend for a season.
Talk about being broke.
Yeah, man, $1,200 for a season, bro. And had to look for a job. I was looking at jobs like Brereton Coat Factory and all that kind of stuff. One of the kids on the team, his dad, Adam Lacey, he was a car salesman. He was a car salesman, and he was like, yo, you come up to the dealership, we'll get you a job. And I'm like, I don't know anything about some of the darn cars. But that's when the whole journey started. So I started coaching, and I was selling cars at the same time. Selling the cars made things a little easy because it was a commission-based job. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the top dealerships in San Diego, so I was able to make some good money doing that. So I didn't have that same pressure I had, like a lot of coaches have when they coaching and doing other jobs. I actually was making probably about five figures a month off of selling cars.
Oh man.
Yeah, yeah. So I would have my practices in the morning because I was a JV coach for San Diego High School. And the kids, they wanted to have practice 6 a.m. in the morning because they wanted to do stuff after school,
right,
whatever,
day,
kid, whatever kids do. and that worked out perfectly for me because at 6 a.m. I coach and then I go work for the rest of the day.
Wow.
So, yeah, so my coaching journey started in 2009.
Your motivation was to stay out of Philly,
yep.
But you also have to have an inner motivation of faith.
Mm-hmm.
To just jump to San Diego.
Yeah.
Yeah, so talk about that faith journey and not knowing and just landing. Like where does your faith have to be to do something like that?
You know what? I truly believe God would never take me far and just to leave me, you know? Mm. And that's how I approached it. I had a coach out there, like Ryan Ermer, who can kind of guide me. I actually stayed on his office couch for the first 2 months, so I didn't have too much pressure of rent. The faith in it is just pretty much, you know, my relationship with God. I feel like I just trust him so much that, you know, like I said, me and Ermer wasn't friends or nothing like that. I wasn't his favorite player. Why is he calling me? It's God. God wanted me to go out of San Diego.
Yeah.
I go to San Diego. The kids embraced me. They love me. At that time, I was still dunking. So, you know, it was like a dunk contest every day in practice.
You still ain't dunking?
No, I tore my ACL. I tore my ACL.
Don't
I ain't
tell
dunking
me that.
No more, bro.
I dunk every year just to show kids I can do it. Don't tell me you tore anything.
Yeah, I can tap the backboard still. Tap the backboard still. But once I received the love from the families, and then even just getting a job, I knew that's where I was supposed to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, so I just try to read the signs for the most part. You know, I don't think I really struggled that much. I think the first maybe 4 months of the San Diego journey was like a struggle, but I'm coming fresh out of college. I didn't have much. I only had $500. I had about 2 suitcases. I didn't have much to really move around. So I'm just starting fresh. So I'm young. You know, I got the energy for it. So, you know, I just feel like everything lined up the way it should have at the time.
Dope. Give me the 2-minute drill. All right. So in 2 minutes, break down your coaching stops from San Diego to where you're at now.
My coaching stops.
Yep, like where you at, coach at and what you were doing, if you get to me in 2 minutes.
San Diego high school was my first place I coached at. Then I, you know, moved to LA, flirted with the idea of being a sports agent or whatnot. That didn't work out, did that for 2 years. Got back into coaching, coached at El Segundo High School for about a summer. that didn't work out. Had a crazy idea to start my own program called One Goal Basketball. That worked out. Still going to this day. I'm on my 11th year with One Goal Basketball. Then I've also coached at Crossroads with my guy AD. Coached there for a few years. And so I was offered a head coaching job at Malibu High School. That didn't work out. So now I'm still with One Goal Basketball, thinking of other different ways to expand my coaching resume.
Oh,
yeah.
Man, I love it. And so you flirted with being a sports agent. So you said that you tried that for 2 years. At what capacity did you try that? Were you with an agency, interning, and what did that look like?
The internship is with moving from San Diego to LA. Now, this agency don't exist no more, but it's a big time agency called ICM, International Creative Management. And I received the acceptance for the internship in May of that, in February of that year. I was going to start in May. Got there in May. I haven't heard from him the whole time throughout these months. I just knew I was supposed to be there in May. Got there in May. The day after I arrived, they called me in to tell me they got rid of their sports department 2 weeks prior. So I ended up going into the talent agency. And remember, I always try to listen to God. I know I don't have any music talent, no comedic talent, but I do know I love helping people. So maybe this is God's way of saying, help these people now. You helped them in coaching basketball, help these guys. So I did that for about 2 years, and I started to realize this is almost like a high profile babysitting job, because they really just like need you every second of the day. Then when they get in trouble, they calling you. And I was like a low level manager or agent, whatever. And I bounced around between agent, manager, worked at some boutique agencies. That my final straw with this one boutique agency, I worked there for about 3-4 months, and they would pay you out of commission, but everyone has to get paid from all the actors and commission and stuff like that. Yeah. So my first check after 3 months was $175. I ran through my savings, everything. I had to go back to selling cars. Selling cars went to renting cars. And then that's when I was like, you know what, I gotta do what I love. And my friend Karan Johnson, he called me one day and was like, yo, why you get away from basketball, bro? You gotta get back to basketball. Why don't you train? And then from there, I was just like, all right, yeah, I'm gonna figure something out. And I went to a party. I went to a party a week after or something like that, after that conversation with Karan. And a guy was like, hey, what do you do? And I was trying to, you know how LA is, I was trying to sound cool, like, yeah, I'm a trainer, you know. But this guy went and told someone else. And that following week, someone called me and said, hey, I heard you train kids. And I did, again, God just talking to me. And then I had $15 in my bank account. And I had two bank accounts. One was $750 and one was $750. And he was like, yo, can you train my daughter? I knew nothing about training. In fact, you know, one of our training sessions ended up breaking a nose. Yeah. But nonetheless.
I've broken noses. I've broken arms. Yeah. When I first started, bro. But
nonetheless, I realized this is where I wanted to be. Because yeah. I had more fun doing the training than I did in the 2 years with managing and doing the agent.
Babysitting.
Yeah, and I also made more money than I did in those 2 years. I made $50 that hour, and I made more money than I made being a manager and agent, so that was cool.
Man, yeah. That's dope, and that's what kicked off the whole career.
Yep.
And then what made you, so I'm assuming, this is how the training worlds work. Everybody starts telling about you, you get way more clients. Mm-hmm. Hey, we need to start a team. Mm-hmm. And so that's how you got to One Go.
You know what? I didn't know anything about club teams. I grew up where we play AAU. If you wanted to get there, if you wanted to get to the tournament, we washed cars. So it wasn't until Malik Rose, who used to play for University of Drexel and the Spurs, until he jumped in and sponsored our team.
Oh, nice.
But so I didn't know anything about people doing club or anything like that. Yes, I was training. I was training some kids and then a fellow coach was like, yo, why don't you start a club? And I was like, what's a club? He wrote it down, wrote me everything out. I was like, oh, shoot. And I was already volunteering. I was volunteering at Palisades Rec Center coaching the kids over there. And one of the parents, Stephen Clark, he had a really good kid named Nathan Clark, they was my first family who really endorsed me and put me in front of families, and the rest was history after that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's dope. So you've been doing it for 11 years. What have you learned, you know, having your own program? The benefits, the pros, the cons?
You know, the benefits is you run your own thing, right? And you can kind of mold it in the way you want to see it on the court. I think that's the benefit of it. And you get it, and obviously you continue your relationship with development with players or whatnot. The cons of it is that, you know, I don't really have too many cons with it, because I just take the good with the good and the bad with the bad. The Palisades area was great. Like, it is a great area, great families. They embraced me. they actually just let me do my thing. They didn't, like, a lot of the parents didn't play college basketball, so they referred to me for a lot of stuff. They trusted me. So, you know, if I had to say the cons of anything, I just didn't. I think the earlier stages, I was having too many games. I think the parents went in too many games. They didn't want to, they didn't like the, not to say they didn't like, but I don't think they understood the idea of practicing more than playing games. Yep. Because the introduction of it is like rec leagues and stuff like that. So they practice one time a week and they play the game. Even if you don't come to practice, you still play the game and you still get the same trophy, the same minutes. So you lose the value of it. So when they play with me and I'm taking kids out for mistakes or countless mistakes, they looking at me like, yo, what are you doing? You know? So I think just getting over that hurdle or that barrier of understanding that this is how the game is taught, this is how you develop players was the toughest one. I think that would be the con if I had to say any.
Dope. Yeah. No, that's dope. Now you started this podcast, mm-hmm. Score Society. Yep. What encouraged that? What message are you trying to bring mm-hmm. With the podcast? And
so Score Society, so it comes in layers. It comes in layers. The first layer was I started out with just merch. I just wanted to get, you know, I'm a ball short, sweatpants, sweatshirt type of guy. And, you know, I was thinking of like, how can I do something else besides just coach? And the scores part of it was the scores mentality, right? Like you miss shots, you got to keep shooting. And no matter what, you know, going on, you got to still keep your confidence. You got to still keep, you know, it's just keeping your confidence through it all, right? And it's a mentality that you can have off the court as well as a scorer. Like life happens, but you got to keep going. You got to keep having confidence. You got to keep pushing. You got to push through. You got to have some perseverance in there. And then it was the society part was just elite-minded people, right? It's being elite-minded. And I wanted to, you know, brand it in that way. But I realized it's more than merch. I want people to hear stories. I want to, because I think that's what we all struggled with before the internet bubble, right? We didn't know, when we had went through problems, we thought we were the only one going through these problems. We thought we were the only ones that this was happening to. Like you said, you had an eligibility issue. I had an eligibility issue. I didn't know. I thought it was just me. I thought I was a fool, right. You know? So I wanted to start interviewing people I wanted to capture the underdog story. I feel like we all are underdogs. For the vast majority of us are underdogs. There are more Division II, Division III, NAIA schools than there are D1 schools. So I wanted to get that story, talk to the underdog about their story, how they overcame, with the hopes that they motivate. We motivate guys. And if we can get keep guys motivated, inspired, we can create a society of scorers with elite minds. So that's where it started, the podcast element of it. And I'm just enjoying the journey. Right now we throwing things to the wall and seeing if it stick. We talk about current topics. I think that's pretty cool. I like to hear people's mindsets towards, you know, whatever's going on at the time. To keep it entertaining, and then I love to hear people's stories. So that's Score Society.
Love it, man. I love it. One of your clips, it's one of your more viral clips. Mm-hmm. You state that coaches should have experience playing at a high level. Uh-huh. Like you said, to the point of even averaging 20 points a game, like they got to go get buckets. They have to have that experience.
Right.
Where does that philosophy come from? And I'm about to argue with you, so you know, and it's all love.
All love.
So, you know, where does that philosophy come from, and why do you believe it?
You know what, man? I'll be completely honest, bro. It was a heartbreaking moment for me one day. I'm coaching. Well, I was getting ready to coach. One goal basketball. I was getting ready to coach. And I don't know if the coach was his dad. I don't know, but the kid was like, I want to say about 10 years old. He's about 10 years old, and the coach was just, he was on him, bro. Like, he was, you know, like he was a kid. He was chewing him out, bro. And it was just like, yo, he's a kid, man. And you know, and obviously you have the surge of so many different programs and whatnot, and parents are now investing their money into it more than ever. And they want their kid to get to the next level, but they're working with coaches who don't understand that a 10-year-old is not a 20-year-old. They're going through a process where they're not developing properly. And what better way to at least bare minimum have someone who played at the next level to give you some type of insight? Now, is it a bulletproof plan? No, right? Like it's not, it doesn't work for everyone, right? We witnessed Magic Johnson try to coach the Lakers before, right? And Isaiah Thomas tried to coach the Knicks, like, so it didn't work out in his favor, but you still have some type of insight, something you can actually take with you to the next level. Like when I was growing up, like I said, Marvin DuBose and Bobby Pendleton were my coaches. Bobby Pendleton was the coach who played basketball, and he didn't go far. He didn't play in college or anything, but he was a really good shooter, and he understood the game. So some of the things that he taught me at 13, 14 years old, I still use to this day and still remember to this day. Yeah. And that's the importance of it. If you got, and I think it's just the difference between being a coach, right, and being a mentor and someone who can develop. A coach is someone who comes in and they pick this player and they got a plan, right? Like we play 2-3 today. Someone who develops, he's there every day. He knows exactly what you can work on, what you should be working on. He's with you through the ups, the downs, the trials, the tribulations. He's having these conversations. That's where the mentorship come in. So I just think, like, you know, players who played at the high level, they experienced that. Most players I know who played at the high level, they all experienced that mentor developmentship. So I think that's something they can, you know, give to the kids.
No, that makes a lot more sense, you know, where you're coming from. Because, you know, for me, so I played junior college ball and wasn't a crazy scorer. Like, I played 7 minutes a game my freshman year. Sophomore year, that was it. I started my sophomore season and we did the fall ball. Mm-hmm. And then I left the school because, you know, the coach was hating on me, which halfway he was, halfway it was my fault, whatever.
Right.
Live with it, right? And so, but the knowledge I gained, I still use some of that stuff that I learned in college. So I see what you're saying. Your experience should help you get there. I think more so, and I was just talking to this from a coach. He's an NBA coach now. And it's more about the personal development of the coaches
right.
than it is about the X's and O's almost. It's like we got to teach them how to lead, teach them how to communicate, yep. teach them how to be operations, teach them all these little things that'll help them be able to focus on at coaching the game more as well. And so that's my, man, that's my big thing with on the coaching side is like give the coaches all the tools they need to be the leader and coach that they need to be
Absolutely.
For these kids to develop. Because it's not about you winning games. It's about these kids developing.
Absolutely.
If the kids develop the right way, you're going to win games. And then for the kids, it's about going back to what you said when you first started, is practicing more than you play.
Yep.
You have to put the reps in. And understanding the game and not just cone drills and doing moves. Like you're seeing it now, even in the NBA, if you watch the Grizzlies, they don't even set pick and rolls. They do it for Ja, but they don't even set pick and rolls anymore. It's all movement and spacing and pure basketball, just basic concepts. And I think they're number one in the league in scoring or number three in the league in scoring now, right? And when they were like number 23 last year.
Yeah, they're up there.
And so, like, those are the things in basketball that I'm so passionate about. It's like, hey, let's get it right. Let's fix this. So I'm with the coaching certification for sure. My goal would be is, like, even somebody who's walking out, if a dad is coaching at the Palisades Rec Center, yo, he needs a certification so he knows these baseline things
Absolutely.
About coaching.
Absolutely.
Even if he's never touched a basketball before.
Yep.
If we can give that information in a short form and, you know, 4-hour course or whatever.
Yep.
Hey, here's the basics. Show me that you understand this information and now implement it into what you're doing, right?
Absolutely. So, 100%. I agree with that. And it's not like a knock on anyone who don't have it, right?
Right.
It's just about the kids, right? Like, you know, me and you know each other because of that basketball right there.
Yeah.
You know, I traveled. My first time on a plane was because of a basketball. I want to make sure kids have that opportunity. And if you're not being taught the right things, or if you don't understand the game in a thorough way, you're not going to be able to get on those planes. You're not going to be able to get those opportunities. So, you know, yeah, I'm very passionate about that. I think that's something that it should be law. It should be some type of law.
No, they do it in soccer. You have to have a license to coach at a certain level. And almost in every other sport, there's like qualifications for things. And basketball became the Wild Wild West in America. where anybody who had money can start a club team. When mm-hmm. before it was those qualified people, your coaches, the coaches I had growing up. And I think like people are in the works of it, right? You see these high level trainers have certifications and they're teaching the right things inside the certifications. It's just not, it's not mandatory for you to play in these leagues. But I think that's the direction youth basketball is going in. Mm-hmm. Just knowing the things I know and the people I know, like it's a conversation we're all having. Us true hoopers, we're all having that conversation, keeping basketball people in basketball.
Right.
And making sure that those certifications are there, making sure the kids are training the right way and not playing 8 games on a weekend.
Yep.
Parents spending $1,000 a weekend just so their kids can play in 4 games that don't matter. You know right. what I mean? Like mm-hmm. changing that culture, changing that environment, I think is our goal. Like
absolutely.
Our God-given ability to do what we do with this basketball and teach kids and give them confidence and all those things is the calling of our life. We have to use this basketball to teach them about life, but yeah. doing it the right way.
Yep, so, absolutely.
And it leads me to this because I just want to hear you say it. I think I know what it is. Like, what do you think your purpose is? Your overall purpose?
Helping others, without a doubt, helping others. I feel most peace, the most fulfilled when I help someone. You know, I don't like I said, I ventured into the entertainment world because I thought my journey was to help someone. I've been doing the coaching thing for 18 years and it don't feel like 18 years. I want to start a new journey of coaching just to help people. So, you know, I love it. I love helping people. I love helping people get to their goals. That's where one goal really came from. That's where it all came from. You got a goal, and my goal is to help you. It's one goal, you know what I'm saying? So, that's my purpose, man. I think that's what people struggle with is finding their purpose. When you find your purpose, the best way to find your purpose is to know what motivates you and keep you excited. You know, and coaching keeps me excited. Helping people keeps me excited.
I want you to be more specific, and it may be a challenge now, right? So you say helping people because mm-hmm. I can help. People in a different way. What attribute or skill do you have personally that you know, if we walk in a room full of 10 people, that mm-hmm. you have more impact than me at that one skill? Because like you said, finding that purpose and that thing, that's what people struggle with. You know it's helping people, right? So you know you're in the right realm. But, and I'm in this place. I'm talking to myself while I'm talking to you, is that how come I'm not more impactful? If I know my purpose, I have the same purpose as you, it's helping people.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to narrow it down to like, what is it specifically that I do that if I walk in this room that I can do more than anyone else?
Teach. I like teaching. Like, but I use the word coaching, but I like teaching. Like,
gets teaching.
Yeah, it is.
Coaching gets teaching.
Is teaching, but I think it could be misconstrued, right? Like, because again, the average guy can go get a team and like, oh, I'm a coach. But because you put 5 players together who are better than other kids, and then you went on YouTube and you saw like different strategies and you applied it, they consider that coaching. Teaching is being more detail oriented, letting them know why you're coming out, what's the reason we're driving to the lane, what are we trying to create. Open up their palate to their mindset to the game. So if I had to say in the form of helping would be teaching. I think if I go in a room and I know something, if I know a topic, if I know a craft, I believe I can teach it better than 90% of people in the room.
So what are you doing to impact more people by teaching?
Outside of basketball?
No, yes, but we'll just say with basketball, right? And it's almost a rhetorical question. Mm-hmm. It's like that thing like, hey, if you know that's what you're called to do, like let's go do that.
Yeah, right now, Score Society, building that platform to motivate, inspire. That's the overall goal with with this platform or as far as Score Society goes, is to inspire and motivate masses, teach them how to get over tough challenges, maybe not using my voice, maybe using other people's voice and journeys and stories. Just being strategic about it, because obviously, you know, we live in an age where everyone wants to be entertained. So we got to find a way to entertain them in the process of doing it. So what I'm doing is creating a platform that's going to motivate and inspire and teach people how to be better people and keep elite mindsets.
That's dope, man. No, I love appreciate it, man. And I love to encourage people to, man, live in that space, man. Mm-hmm. If we all did what we were built to do, this world would be a better place.
And absolutely. So
that's what it's all about.
Man. Yeah, yeah, man.
Karina's Corner, you got any questions? No? Nothing? Awesome. Awesome. We're going to move on to the next segment, the My Rushmore. All right, mm-hmm. So you're Mount Rushmore, man. You're a hooper, man. So yep. We just going to do your top four players of all time.
Let's do it. LeBron James. And this is in order, by the way. LeBron James.
Respect.
Jordan. Bro.
I know who you're struggling with, too. I can feel it. Go ahead.
I'm struggling with Shaq and Kobe.
Oh, wow.
I'm struggling with Shaq and Kobe, and my fourth, don't care what nobody say, Allen Iverson.
Because you're from Philly.
Yeah. But look, I got as far as the Shaq, I got a reason for all of them, though.
Talk to me.
So, LeBron James came straight out of high school with more pressure than anyone. He's been more consistent than everyone. He's exceeded expectations. People may say, oh, well, he lost in the finals and everything else, but he's been there half his career. That's more than a lot of guys.
Man.
So, obviously he changed the game. He changed the way we look at the game. You're talking about a guy who's 6'9", 260 pounds, can move with the speed of light, can pass the ball, super athletic, developed his jump shot over the years, can hit a jump shot, great leader. The knock on him is the super team. He was a superstar on the super team.
Talk to him.
Okay. So he, you know, MVPs and all the other accolades, so I give him that. Jordan, another guy, revolutionized the game, was an amazing player. A couple of reasons why he's my second, not my first. One is, if you go back and look at them years they won it in the 90s, he was the only two guard on the top five scorers. Those seasons, like he was the only guard. It was a big man era, so he wasn't going against what LeBron was going against. Clyde Drexler was in his decline. He was in his decline, bro.
He won two chips when he left.
Who?
Clyde.
Clyde won two chips when?
With Houston, no.
Oh, with Houston, but he had Hakeem Olajuwon was the guy. Hakeem Olajuwon was the guy on that team.
Okay.
So Clyde Drexler was robbing, bro.
It was a big man's league.
League. So, and then Jordan quit three times. the first time he left the league, he said he wasn't motivated. He was that's a true press conference. And I understood why he wasn't. I know his dad was murdered or whatnot. Then he came back, he did his thing. But my point in that is that he took breaks. LeBron was consistent. He ain't take no breaks. He ain't get injured, so he ain't take no breaks. So I gotta give him that. Shaq and Kobe. Now, personally, I feel like Shaq would be the best of all time if, and I don't like to use if, but I'm gonna use it. If he could make free throws, if he's at a 12 foot jump shot, just a 12 foot, 15 foot jump shot. But you think about it, he averaged 30 points, over 30 points, averaged over 35 points in the finals with them three-peats, and 15 rebounds with no threes, no free throws, and barely on a fast break. So that means he had the most predictable game that you could ever think of and still dominated.
Yep.
Obviously, Kobe, I love his brand as far as like work ethic. Right, like here's a guy who came in the league off the bench, worked his way up to the top. His brand inspired many, because everyone now feels like all I gotta do is outwork people. All I gotta do is outwork people to get to where I want to be. I got the Mamba mentality. So it's just a tie between those two because of that. And then Allen Iverson, bro. Allen Iverson. In the 90s, he was the first guard outside of Jordan to average 27 points, coming straight out of college. Oh, no, it wasn't straight out of college. That was 2 years later out of college. But revolutionized the game, made guys feel, if you was under 6 foot, made you feel like you could make the league. He kind of, he helped and hurt the game too, in a way, because every guard thought they could score at that point. Every guard at like 5'9", 5'10", wanted to play like Allen Iverson. So, yeah. And when they get to college, that wasn't their role. But Allen Iverson, yeah, I love that he stood his ground on being himself off the court and made a tremendous impact on the game in Philadelphia. Philadelphia at that time, I mean, Jerry Stackhouse was pretty good. Maybe a Derek Coleman was pretty good, but the last big star was like Dr. J. And for me growing up, I mean, I was born in 85. Dr. J was done by like 86, 87, I believe. Yeah. So you figure we didn't have nothing to cheer about like with like a Allen Iverson type until, you know, 10, 11 years later. And he inspired so many kids to play basketball. So I'm going to definitely give it to Allen Iverson on the fourth.
Respect. Mm-hmm. Definitely respect the 4.5, 5, you know.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, If I had to eliminate Kobe or Shaq, I eliminate Kobe.
Woo!
I'm eliminating Kobe.
Man, you in LA with that.
Bro.
Hit him in the comments.
If Shaq had a jumper at some capacity, he would have definitely been the greatest of all time.
It's a very interesting concept.
I'm trying to tell you, but you talk about a guy who averaged 30 points with no free throws.
Come on, 50% three throws.
Yeah, bro, that's gold.
Man, my four. My number one is LeBron. For all the reasons that you said, I've been blessed with the opportunity to work with him for the last 5 years in the summer, at least once, if not more times, and so this is how he approaches the game. Yeah. There's nobody more prepared than LeBron. Comes in, he beats everybody to the gym no matter what time it is. He stays an hour after to get his body worked on. Like, his level of commitment to this game should be our level of commitment to God first and foremost, but to whatever we do, like, if we did it on the level of excellence that LeBron does for this game, man, we would be some successful people. Absolutely. And so that's my respect for him, is that he's a like savant. Like, he knows the game. Like, I was watching this clip the other day on TikTok, and it was all his handshakes. Like, this dude memorizes every handshake with every teammate ever. Yeah. Like, yo, how does he do? Like, he literally is that smart, and he remembers everything. Absolutely. And he doesn't forget. He's calling, we'll be in training sessions, like, oh, no, that's the play they ran in the playoffs, game 5, blah, blah, blah. They did that to us, and he literally has this crazy memory with that kind of stuff. And
he got documented, man. I mean, this is even an 8. I wish he could have a day in the life just so he can show.
Oh, no, he has multiple.
He does?
When he shot Space Jam 2, we were training him every day. They built the gym on the Warner Brothers lot for us to train him in. And we documented the whole thing.
Oh, wow.
And so I think it's all going to come out like later.
Oh,
like,
I got you. Okay.
Like, so say, there's cameras all the time. Like, he has, I think it's just, they saving it, right? There's no reason to put it out now because he's a show. You know,
right.
It's just when he retires, it's like, oh, check out LeBron's life, his first 10 years in the league, now his next 10 years, whatever. But he has all that. I think we're going to see all that and experience all that for sure. So, yeah, LeBron's my GOAT. Right. And it's changed. Jordan was my GOAT for a long time until it was even after I started working with LeBron. It was probably like 2 years after that where it was like, nah, he got it. And
yeah, I don't understand. Like I said, I love Jordan. I just feel like the game has evolved so much. It's hard to really just, like, it's hard to say like someone is still better than what the game is right now. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like music, right? Like, I love Biggie, but I don't know if Biggie would have adapted to all the changes of music, but I know Jay-Z did. You know what I mean? So I got to put Jay-Z first, you know? So it's one of those things where it's like, it's not a slight against Jordan, it's just the fact that someone just did it longer and he survived and flourished. And
still getting triple-double.
Yeah, he's still flourishing, bro. Like, at 40 years old, like I said, I can barely touch the backboard, and you talking about a guy 40 years old.
Dunked on somebody last night, like what?
Yeah, bro.
So
off of oop, so, right, you know. Right. So it's like you keep. It's silly to even think like the game hasn't evolved where Jordan's skill set hasn't been met yet. That doesn't make sense to me.
No, 100%. And then so and Jordan's mentality about the game is what I think made him. He's just a super competitor. Mm-hmm. Like you ain't going. There's nothing you could do about Jordan. Right. And so, and then man, my number three is actually Steph Curry, man.
Really?
You talk about work ethic. You talk about underdog. You talk all those
Very
things,
true.
Right? And it's not a knock on AI because AI is the reason that I started working on my handles and modeled my game after, like, for sure, AI, right? We knew AI was good, though. We didn't know Steph Curry was good until he was good. And mm-hmm. then he had early on ankle injuries, overcame them, and still became this superstar, best shooter of all time by far, not even close.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it gave people who aren't quick, like AI for us, because we was athletic, right? If you wasn't athletic, you couldn't act like AI.
Nope.
You couldn't.
Nope.
But Curry gives everyone
that opportunity,
mm-hmm. right? Like, yo, I could be Steph Curry if I work hard on my jump shot and work on these things, right? And he just changed the game from because of where he can shoot from mm-hmm. and his way of doing it, man.
I agree with that. Steph Curry has the most relatable game. I think the hardest thing about LeBron is that you can't pretend to be LeBron. You can't be 6'9", 260, struggling.
With 50-inch vertical or whatever
you
got.
Yeah, doing that. But Curry, a kid, you can actually – I think he inspired the youth. Maybe more than more than Allen Iverson. But I'm still keeping Allen Iverson my fourth. But Steph Curry definitely has the most relatable game in NBA history, I think.
And I think it's going to be felt after he retires, right? Mm. It's, you know, and weird comparison, but we respect rappers more after they pass away, right? It is what happens, right?
Yeah, I agree.
Because now we're reflecting on everything they did. I don't think we reflect. I don't think old heads, people older than our generation, reflect on what LeBron is doing now.
Right.
They won't be able to see until he's done.
Yep.
And the same thing with Curry is like, yo, when we go back and watch these highlights and see all these crazy games he had and see what he did at 6'3 and light skin, dog, we gonna be like, yo, he got it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
and then fourth is Kobe.
Yeah.
You know, baby Jordan, man, he took what Jordan did and ultra skilled it out. Uh-huh. You know, like, and took it to the next level. He's a dog on defense. And I love Kobe when he first came to the league. I did not like him when he went through his protagonist phase where he was trying to piss everybody off, the Black Mamba phase. I actually didn't like him. And then once his last 2 years in the league, like, I started like, oh man, this dude is way too good.
Right.
Like, seeing how he, like, me maturing and seeing how he reads the game and what he's able to do and all those things. It's like, all right, he got it. Like, he has mastered this game more than anybody. Same thing. Like, everybody plays, oh, he's trying to be like Jordan, but why not copy the best?
Right.
And be better than him. Like, he literally had every movement Jordan had, every celebration Jordan had to the T. And probably did it better than him.
Yeah, that's why I didn't like him.
Right, me neither. Yeah.
Like,
I was like,
how you gonna copy and paste his game, bro?
but it worked. You know what I mean?
It worked sure. It definitely worked.
He that's what he's doing. It's like, I'm going after the best. So I'm gonna take what he has and make it better.
Yeah.
He loved the game, man. Mm-hmm. Playing through torn Achilles, broken fingers, broken shoulders, shooting with his left hand. Like, yo, he he gave his all. And so, those are my top four. And those are my top four, like, no bias, just on some basketball stuff. Those aren't my favorite four players, but those are the top four for me.
I think that's a fair four. I think that's definitely fair. I mean, that's definitely key what you said about Steph Curry, though. I've thought about that, but he's top 10 for sure. Top Steph.
Whoa, dang, top 10 is low.
I mean, top five?
Yeah.
Is he top five? Is Curry's top five?
Is he? Because you got four. You have five.
I'm not putting
top
him over. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That five right there is my top five.
Okay.
I put Curry six. Can we put Curry six?
Can you?
I can put Curry six.
He's better than KD. He's better than.
He better than KD.
Jokic. Right now,
You know what? I got like a bone to pick with like the European style stuff. You know, because here's the thing with the Jokic thing. Jokic is great. It's not a big man era, so I can't never say he's gonna be the best big man of all time, right? I had like Stephen Graham on my show. He used to play for the journeyman in the NBA. He was saying Jokic is the best big man of all time. And I had to disagree with him. But, and the reason why is because, like, I'm big on guys making impact right away. Shaq made an impact right away, right? Most of the European players, including Jokic, develop for 4 or 5 years in the league. So they have no pressure. They have no, like, there's no pressure on them to be good. Most players don't even, most, the average fan right now don't remember who's the first pick of the 2025 draft or 2024 draft. But they remember who the 55th pick was, right? So they don't have the same pressure. So when I have to compare, like, a Jokic being better than Shaq, like, Shaq had way more pressure than him, and he handled it. And it flourished. You still see Shaq on the TV to this day. Jokic is amazingly skilled, so he's definitely up there for sure. Because I'm not going to slight him because he didn't, you know, be a great player from the beginning, but I'm not going to, because, yeah, I'm not going to take a nothing away from his skill set. He's definitely better than most big men that we've seen over the years. But.
So you think Shaq is better than Jokic?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Impact-wise, dominate-wise, like I said, he had the most predictable game. Shaq had the most predictable game and still was getting 36 in the playoffs. And that big man era, Jokic is not even in the big.
It's hard. I think so it's harder for Jokic.
You think Jokic would be the same player right now if he had to go against David Robinson, Tim Duncan?
He's doing it. Against Giannis, who else is in there?
Him and Giannis, I gotta see that him and Giannis matchup. I gotta see them stats. That's a good one. I gotta see how they actually play against each other.
He's way more versatile. He can shoot the three. Shaq was a good passer. People, I think, underrate how good of a passer Shaq was, but Jokic is the best passing big man ever.
Right.
I mean, like, and his ability to go out there and just get triple doubles, and he's doing it with a dad bod. Makes a difference to me. Like, that's like saying, just like you saying Shaq can do it because he couldn't make free throws. Like, yo, if Jokic got in shape, who would he be?
I agree. Like I said, I ain't taking that away from him. He's up there for sure. I just want it. He's just not playing against a good big night in and night out. Shaq was playing against a good big night in and night out. The top five scorers in the league in the 90s outside of Jordan was big men.
Shaq was better in the 2000s, though.
You say again?
Shaq was better in the 2000s. That's when he won all his chips.
Yeah, he was better in the 2000s. That's what I'm saying. Like, Shaq had a strong decade of dominance. Jokic
is on his way to a decade. He's just won. He's three-time MVP.
Three-time MVP.
And probably, not probably, he may get fourth this year.
He got one ring.
One ring so far.
He got drafted in 2015.
Right. We're at year nine with three MVP. How many MVP Shaq got?
You got one, right?
Oh, okay.
But they gave it to Steve Nash 1 year. Steve Nash averaged 15.
That was Kobe. That was Kobe's year. That was the year Kobe dropped like 40 points, 12 straight. Yeah, that was weird. That wasn't even Shaq's year. That was when Shaq was in Miami, right? That was 2006.
Yeah, but Kobe didn't make the playoffs that year.
Don't matter what he was doing. What he was doing on the court, man. It don't matter.
That was the year he had 81. But Kobe didn't make the playoffs that year.
But you couldn't do anything with him, even not making the playoffs.
I agree. That's when Kobe started to emerge. I think that's when Kobe started to, you know, like, all right, it became the Kobe era. It is the Jokic era. Is it the Jokic era right now?
Yes.
You think so?
All the MVPs, you have to, like, we're attracted to what looks like us. I think that's what it is, right? We want to see the young black guard be the best player. Like, I want to see Anthony Edwards thrive. I don't want to see Jokic play. I don't turn on Denver Nugget games. Mm-hmm. I don't.
That's because we don't. It ain't even about, like, we want to see someone look like us. We just don't know their story. Like I said, they develop in the league, so they can get drafted and go under the radar for the next 4 years, and we never know who they are. We knew AI got into that fight at the bowling alley. We knew him in Georgia. I went to Kobe Bryant game. I went to LeBron James game when he played against Strawberry Mansion. I remember picking up that magazine in the lunchroom with LeBron James on there as an eighth grader. We watched them the whole way through, so we seeing everything. These guys, like players from overseas, they're not really, we don't know who they are, so it's really hard to connect to them other than their skill set. And Jokic has an amazing skill set. Is he top So you think he better than Kareem?
It's hard for me to do the Kareem thing because he's so old. I never seen Kareem play.
I agree.
And so I'm not feel fit to answer that question.
I agree.
I believe his skill set has a wider range than Kareem's.
I agree.
That old school big man had moves that people, you couldn't do anything with Shaq's power. Mm-hmm. You couldn't do anything with Kareem's hook. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, Hakeem Olajuwon had the footwork.
Yeah. So to me, if you talk about skill, Hakeem has the best footwork.
Yeah, he has the best footwork.
Ever. He's better than guards at the footwork.
But see, here's the thing. With Jokic, he can shoot the three, but it's hard to really compare for the old school big men because they wasn't allowed to shoot. You remember back in the day, like if a big man started dribbling more than three steps.
Because they couldn't, though.
Could they not? I feel like Kevin Garnett definitely could handle the ball.
He couldn't shoot threes. He was a mid-range killer, though. He could not shoot threes to save his life.
Couldn't shoot threes? Shoot threes, bro. He didn't consistently shoot them.
Exactly, because he couldn't.
That just wasn't part of the game back then. See, that's the thing. Certain stuff wasn't part of the game because it wasn't introduced to us yet. LeBron James is in the Karl Malone body. Like,
that's Karl Malone's fault for staying on the block. Magic did it. Magic did it in the 80s.
Magic did what?
He was a point guard at 6'9".
Yeah, Magic. Yeah, those was like the anomalies, though. Like, that wasn't like the makeup of it.
Exactly. He did it, though.
He's
who inspired the LeBron James, right? So I'm saying if you were that good, you could step out. Like, Lamar Odom was the first, like, stretch or point forward, right? He just did it.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? It wasn't the people who do it are the one. Curry was the first one shooting threes from that deep that consistently. There was other people who shot threes from deep.
Yeah,
but he did it consistently to impact the game different.
Like, I just think, like, it depends on the coaching at that time. I depended on the coach. Like, there was a lot of good, fast guards, but Larry Brown, the Sixers organization, literally surrounded him with just guys who played defense and guys who hit open shots. Mm-hmm. I think it's just a matter of the situation. I don't like it'd be hard for me to think that Kevin and Garnett could make a 20-foot jump shot but couldn't take two more steps back and shoot a three. Like, it just wasn't part of the game. Like, I just don't think it was. Tim Duncan's super skill. Tim Duncan can shoot a three.
Can he?
Greg Popovich is an old school coach. Jerry Sloan for the Utah, they was old guys, right? Now it's like, even the coaches down are younger.
Right.
The coaches are younger, so the game, so that's what I'm saying. The game has changed so much, or even around the coaching. So the coaching now allows more. Like, when I first started coaching as a youth ball coach, it was certain things I wasn't working on. Now I am working on threes with an 11-year-old or whatnot, you know? So it just changed. I don't want to – I mean, granted, we can't go right? So we won't give it to Jokic, being the second or third big man of all time.
Who's number two?
I still give it to Shaq. And I'm like,
and Hakeem?
We ain't gonna give Hakeem. I ain't gonna do Jokic like that. I put Jokic in there. I'll give Jokic the second one, but I'm still putting Shaq first.
All right, no, I think it's that. I'm gonna go back and watch film and like really, really break that down because I understand what you're saying. Like, I just feel like great players change everything, right? Yeah. AI changed everything, like mm-hmm. Ross and Jordan. Like, mm-hmm. Hip hop is here. This culture is in the league now, and ain't nothing you can do to slow it down. And that's why we have. Like, if you watch Curry's game, he's AI with mm-hmm. a three-point shot. Like,
yep.
People don't see that. Like, all his crossovers are AI crossovers. Like, mm-hmm. But let's move on to the next segment, man. I love talking basketball. Welcome to SportsCenter. No, I'm sorry. Fix the net, man. A misconception about Sean Amos that you want to make clear, man. So let us know what that is.
Fix the net.
Tell us what the truth, and then fix the net.
Over the years, as a coach, I've heard – being mean or stern, and that is not true. I'm not mean or stern. I just want to get the best out of the players, and it's really hard to balance a joking, playful attitude with young players and still get what's needed, right? Mm-hmm. So I try to go, and I have other coaches under me, So I try to go in as like the bad cop, you know, as a good cop, bad cop. I try to create a balance. So I'm not mean, I'm just, or stern. I just want to produce what's important at the time. Now, when practice is over, I'm joking, I'm playing around, I'm goofing up. I stay, you know, I play the kids one-on-one here and there. But when I'm in the coaching mode, I want to make sure that, you know, we do what we're supposed to do. And there's two sides of it. One, because I want to make sure they understand what needs to be done. The second side of it is that, you know, parents is paying money, and I want to make sure I'm producing a good product on the court for them. So that's a misconception.
Go ahead and fix the net. Oh, he didn't fix it. Oh, he mean, y'all. The net didn't get fixed. First lies.
The ball don't lie.
In our last segment, man, we flipped the script. Two questions for me. It could be anything.
Yeah, man. I want to know, you know, you told me about a little bit about you playing junior college, right? And you told me a little bit about your programs. What made you start your program if you didn't have a good experience on the college level or the junior college?
Yeah, same. I think it's the same thing, man. Not having the right information. I had a Division II offer my senior year and didn't take it because my pops was like, oh, you got Division I's looking at you. I had some Division I's who were interested but not calling me. They were telling my coach that we're watching him. And the D2 offer was right before the season started. And I should have took it. Like, the coach loved me. He wanted me. It was a great fit and would have been a great college experience. And so, you know, not taking that offer, I went to junior college, had a terrible experience in junior college, and not believing in myself, not having the right information about academic stuff, and like all those things led me to never playing college basketball again. And so I never wanted that to happen to any of the kids that I worked with. And the me training came from just like, I just loved it. Like you said, like once I got out there and I was teaching the kids something, and you see, I'm like, then I could see, and I could still do it, where I see instant improvement in the kid with the things I teach, right? Because it's just fundamentals. Like, simple rip-throughs, jump stops, and shooting form will change anybody's game. Like, it doesn't take a lot to get a kid to start gaining confidence and understanding that they can play this game if they work hard. Right. And so seeing those results from the kids and seeing how motivated they were to work out with me, and we was out in the sun and at the park, you know, first starting off. And so seeing that is what just kept me going. And then a little fire lit under me. I just got married and I got fired from my job as a financial advisor. And so I had to go make money. And so that basketball was right there. I'm like, yo, let me train and get things going. And so 4 clients turned into 60 clients in 8 months.
Wow.
Boom. And I was like, oh, well, I ain't doing, like, I'm making more money than I would, you know, short term as a financial advisor. Long term, probably make more, but it just kept growing. And just seeing kids reap the benefits of their own hard work is what it's about for me, and my ability to communicate. I'm answering the question that I asked you earlier. My ability to communicate to people is my strength. Like, I know what to say, how to say it to different kids because of how I was raised. I was raised in a house where there's a bunch of different people there all the time. My mom was the caretaker. So I know how to communicate to different people in different spots to get them motivated to do what they need to do in their life. And so, and I did it on the basketball course where I do it best. And so just continuing to see that, and man, it's led to me owning a program that's kind of revolutionary in the way we operate. There's not many schools and programs that do what CORE does on the middle school level. And the success those kids have after they leave the program, and how they, yo, that was the best time of my life was middle school. Like, I love hearing. I hope they have better times after middle school, but it's literally their best time of their life because they're growing, learning, getting better, creating relationships. And, yeah, man, just seeing people go reach their goals, man, that's it. So.
And my second question, Elevate Your Game podcast, where do you see it 5 years from now?
5 years? 5 years, I see it being one of the top podcasts in the space. I believe that what we're talking about and the people I'm talking to is who the basketball community needs to hear. And it's no disrespect to the other basketball-based podcasts out there. This is the real, though. This is real people's journeys and real information that people need to navigate life if they're in this basketball space. And I think it's going to catch fire and people are going to go back. Like, my first episode was Katino Mobley. Yeah. Like who, yo, I'm starting this podcast. Oh, I'm on. Matt Barnes called me to be on this podcast. Like, they're going to go back and listen and hear this information. And we're just creating an archive, right? We're in season three, huh? Low key.
Almost.
Yeah. Okay. We're almost in season three of this and doing it for almost 2 years now. Dope. Straight. And the guests that we've had on this show, it's been extraordinary, man. Just hearing the journey and the information. There's like, man, we got to organize this when we're talking about the junior college experience. Mm-hmm. So many people didn't qualify to go Division I who sat in that chair. And so, like, we need to organize that and put it out. And so, yeah, just being one of, and my goal is to find the expertise. That's the next part. It's like, I want to narrow this down. So, like, your expertise, like, first off, I think you know this, but you're a salesman. Like, you're a heck of a communicator and a salesman.
Well, thanks, bro.
Yeah, no, that's why you're successful with this, like, because you know how to sell, and and it's real. It's not you trying to get over on somebody. You're actually selling a product that somebody needs. And so, like, I want to talk about that. I want to talk about your sales experience and how you relate that to basketball. Like, that's your expertise. So I want to focus in more on the expertise of our guests. And so, bigger, like our production, right? We're working on other projects outside of just this podcast now that we're getting going in 2025. That should be super dope, super informative, same impact. We want to tell people stories in order to encourage this next generation to reach their goals. Uh-huh. And people love this show. Like, the fans of this really show good. Are the fans of this show. And I don't care who else listen to it. That's but I know it'll reach everybody who needs to hear it. And that's what it's about for me.
That's what's up. Yeah, I got a chance to watch a couple episodes. And then, yeah, you actually doing really good as far as, like, the conveying people's stories and getting the information out there. So I'm very grateful that you had me on the show.
No, absolutely,
appreciate it.
Man. No, thanks.
Definitely gonna connect after this. So
yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. 24-second shot clock. That's your camera right there. Tell the people where they can find you and any message that you have for them.
Yes, you can find me on scores_society. That's pretty much it. All that's on all platforms: YouTube, Instagram. Scores_society, and stay motivated. Stay motivated. Stay focused, and continue to think elite and together. That's all I have.
Man, thanks for coming on the show, bro.
Appreciate your time.
Yes, sir. That's all we have for you today, folks. We'll see you next time. Peace.